Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Hey now, Semper Fi. Welcome in to this Monday edition of Sports Talk here on WWL, AM, FM, and.com. Hope everybody had a good and safe weekend. Can't be said about the LSU baseball Tigers. We'll get to that in a few moments. Jerry Palm, CBS Sports College basketball senior writer. The Elite Eight in the NCAA men's basketball tournament is set. Ben McDonald, former LSU pitcher, will join us at 5:30 to break down LSU's sweep, or getting swept by Tennessee over the weekend. Steve Worthy, CEO of the 4Kids Foundation, will preview the Zurich Classic at Zurich Classic Media Day today. He'll stop by at 6:20, and we'll hand it off to LSU baseball coach Paul Menary for the Paul Menary Show at 7 o'clock on the LSU Sports Radio Network. Reportedly, the Saints are going to sign former Chiefs defensive end Tano Passanio. And it's spelled, really interestingly, K-P-A-S-S-A-G-N-O-N. That's his last name, but it's pronounced Passanio. Kind of fitting, a pass rusher. 4 seasons with the Kansas City Chiefs. Tom Pelissero from the NFL Network is reporting this. The Saints have agreed to terms on a 2-year deal with Passanio. He's 6'7", 289 pounds. 6'7", long, lanky defender. 61 career regular season games. He's tallied 7 sacks, 12 tackles for a loss, 5 passes, 5 pass defensed, and a forced fumble. He's going to provide some depth in the Saints defensive line. They lost Trey Hendrickson this offseason to the Bengals in free agency. So this is not one that you're going to get terribly excited about, but he's an intriguing guy, former second-round pick of the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, let's get to a little LSU baseball, shall we? LSU, the Tigers were swept this past weekend, at the hands of the Tennessee Volunteers in a really odd kind of weekend where Game 2 Saturday night was, the ninth inning was postponed until Sunday, so they finished the game on Sunday, finished Game 2 on Sunday. It ended up going into extra innings. I'll get to that in a few moments. And then they played a 7-inning game and lost to the Vols also in extra innings. It was supposed to be just 7 innings, and that was headed to extras, I believe, unless they hit the home run in the bottom of the 7th. I'll check the box score. But nonetheless, LSU swept this weekend by the Tennessee Volunteers. First time that has happened, that Tennessee has swept LSU in baseball since 2009. Well, that's a good omen if you think about it, but I don't know if we can get too jazzed up about it, because in 2009 they lost to Tennessee in a sweep. The Volunteers swept the Tigers, and LSU went on to win the College World Series. You could use a number of different words to describe LSU baseball's weekend. Gross, disgusting, frustrating. They've gone from the 12th-ranked team in the country to unranked in some polls. And then again, it is early. LSU just 1-5 in conference play for the first time since 2011. They missed the College World Series that season. They did not even qualify for the postseason. And that could be a reality for this year's LSU baseball team. They're young, but there's some real concerning numbers and stats that I'm going to get to that if you're an LSU baseball fan, you got to be pulling your hair out. They're kind of a feast or famine offense, and they can kind of be that way in the pitching staff, in particular out of the bullpen. Landon Marceau, Jaden Hill, and A.J. Labisto, they're not the problem. I know Jaden Hill had a rough-ish outing. 5 runs on 6 hits, 4 walks. But this is what I mean by kind of a feast or famine offense and feast or famine out of the bullpen. LSU's offense left 25 runners on base this weekend. LSU also struck out 38 times. And they're averaging 11.5 strikeouts a game in conference play. The Tigers have gone down on strikes over 100 times so far this season, and they've only played 24 games. Now, get to the pitching staff. So, starting pitching was okay. Two-thirds of your weekend guys, I thought, pitched well. A.J. Labus gave up 2 runs. Got a no decision. Devin Fontenot got the loss in relief. Landon Marceau on Friday lost a 3-1 ball game. That's back-to-back outings that his offense has let him down. We're handing out grades here. So for LSU, offensively, they relied too much on the home run. They had 31 hits in the series with Tennessee. That's 10 a game. That's pretty darn good. However, they only scored 11 runs off those 31 hits. They can't hit in the clutch or key moments of the game with runners on base. Offensively, they get an F. Now, pitching-wise, again, the starters were two-thirds of your starting rotation was, I thought, very good. When you put 29 hitters on base via walk or hit by pitch, that's going to come back and bite you. 29 free passes will get you beat every time. That's a concern. Either walks or hit by pitch. Now, for LSU, if you're trying to spin a positive out of it, it's that you lost two close games, two one-run games in the series against Tennessee, and all 3 losses were by a combined 4 runs. But that's the SEC. That's how it works. Look, right now, LSU is 3-3 in 1-1 games. They're very good college baseball programs, would be more 5-1 in 1-1 games, or at least 4-2. For instance, number one Vanderbilt, who's coming to Baton Rouge this coming weekend, they've played in 4 1-run games. Vandy's 3-1. In those games. And oh, by the way, Vanderbilt starting pitcher Jack Leiter, who LSU is going to see this weekend, has pitched 16 innings in the conference this season. He's yet to give up a hit. Almost had back-to-back no-hitters, carried one into the eighth, but he had thrown 124 pitches in his previous outing. That was a no-hitter, complete game no-hitter. The week before, he was over 100 pitches again. So they removed him from the ball game. He might have had back-to-back no-hitters had he stayed in the game. But pitch count was elevated early in the season, early in conference. You might see this increase if you were in May or June, but not right now in March and second week of conference play. Still plenty to get to on LSU baseball. Overall team grade, I give him a D. And I'll talk about some coaching decisions. I think LSU coach Paul Maneri probably regrets a certain decision in game 2 that might have cost LSU the game. We're just getting started here on Sports Talk on WWLAMFM.com. Still grinding on LSU baseball. Welcome back to Sports Talk. LSU baseball swept over the weekend to Tennessee, or by Tennessee, I should say. It's amazing how quickly it goes south for LSU this past weekend. I was talking about the offense being feast or famine, 38 strikeouts on the weekend, the 29 walks are hit by pitch. LSU's pitching staff issued Tennessee. And here's something that I want you to pay attention to, because I often get accused of not being critical of Paul Maneri or being a Paul Maneri apologist. But look, as a skipper, Paul Maneri, when things aren't going well, you take the heat and you deflect credit when things are going well. You give the credit to the players. And Paul Maneri, if you watch the games this weekend, was visibly frustrated in Knoxville. And when you lose, it's typically on you as the coach. Now, to be fair to Paul Maneri, he didn't strike out 38 times this weekend. He also didn't issue 29 free passes. But he can be second-guessed for not intentionally walking Tennessee center fielder Drew Gilbert in the bottom of the ninth inning in Game 2. And the reason he didn't is because the cardinal rule is you don't ever intentionally walk the game-winning run, the go-ahead run. You don't put him on the base. Now, Gilbert sent the game, and this is Game 2 now, into extra innings when he smashed a two-out, two-strike double to right field, driving in the game-tying run, and he would later walk off the Tigers with a solo home run in the 11th inning. So, overall, I would give the coaching a grade of C. You can't always go by what the book says. I think Paul Maneri would acknowledge that and has acknowledged that. Sometimes you got to go against conventional wisdom, conventional baseball wisdom. So if you're going to second-guess Paul Maneri, you can second-guess him there on not putting Drew Gilbert on in the bottom of the ninth inning. But I think that's the benefit of hindsight as well, because if you pitch to him, you strike him out. He was one strike away from being a strikeout victim and LSU winning the game. That's the cruel sport of baseball, in particular in the SEC. So if you want to be critical of Coach Paul Maneri, there you go. That's where you can be. Now, if LSU doesn't turn it around and they continue, they go 13-17 in the conference like they did in 2011, they're not going to make the NCAA baseball tournament. And I'm sure a few knuckleheads will want to move on from Paul Maneri, but I'll just warn you, he'd be out of a job for about 24 hours, if that. And you don't fire the active winningest coach in college baseball for one bad season. You just don't do it. Those that are have always been against Paul Maneri will continue to be against him. They'll never see his accomplishments. They won't. They refused. So a text here from 8170 says they had 17 hits Saturday. It really is just bad luck. Some of it. I agree with that. Look, in baseball, you know, You can hit balls right at players on the field and you hit it on the screws and hit it well, but it's an out. But at the same time, you can't strand 25 base runners. You just can't do it. That's a feast or famine offense. And look, they're young. We've talked about the youth on this baseball team. They're going to have their moments. 2008, they started out similar, ended up making it to Omaha. So still, I mean, we're six games into a 30-game conference schedule. So, a lot can happen. They can turn things around. But as it stands right now, as it looks right now, it's not looking good. It could be a long season for LSU baseball. I'm not answering that question. Christian, it's all your fault that LSU baseball sucks. I guess I'll take the blame for it. Why not? Another one here from 9954 says, LSU's not playing like a top 25 ranked team. They're playing the big boys now in the SEC, not midweek rent-a-win cupcake teams. It's just a little reality. Well, you're not too far off. Yes, I mean, look at the SEC across the board in college baseball, the most dominant conference in college baseball. The idea that, you know, they just get cupcake wins during midweek is not true, because they've lost a few midweek contests as well. So, you know, Jerry Palm joining us now, CBS College basketball senior writer. Jerry, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good. I was getting on a little LSU baseball rant. They had they had a bad weekend against Tennessee and were swept. So there are a few LSU fans that no matter what happens to LSU, they always want to blame Paul Maneri and run Paul Maneri out of town. But nonetheless, the field of Elite Eight in the NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament is set. And, Jerry, of the eight teams remaining, who has the Who would be the underdog to end up making it to the championship game or the Final Four?
Oh, gosh. Well, the two biggest underdogs would be UCLA and Oregon State, the two double-digit seeds that are still left. Oregon State's at 12, would not have made the tournament at all if they had not won the Pac-12 tournament in the automatic bid. And then UCLA was in the first four, the play-in games, and they are still around. They're trying to do what VCU did the very first year of the first four. They went from the first four to the final four. And UCLA will now get a chance to do that, taking on Michigan tomorrow night.
By your estimation, do you think we're going to see Baylor and Gonzaga in the championship game?
Yes. Yeah, that's kind of how it's been pointing all season. Illinois came on strong late in the year and earned a number one seed and looked like they could be part of that picture as well, but then they went out early. So right now, you know, Gonzaga and Baylor have looked like the two best teams in the tournament. And, you know, things seem to be pointing that way. But as we have seen in this tournament, no matter how much it looks like something's going to happen, it may not happen.
Yeah, it's been a wild one, that's for sure. More wild than I think we've had in certainly a good time, or a good amount of time, I should say. Arkansas, the only SEC team remaining, Jerry. They're taking on Baylor tonight. How much of a chance do they have?
Well, they have a chance. You know, they're a very athletic team. They're going to have to shoot well against Baylor because Baylor plays – they're very strong on both ends of the floor. So, you know, Arkansas is going to have a really good game shooting because I think they can defend and hang with Baylor that way. I just don't – I don't trust their offense enough. But if they have a good offensive game – then they've got a shot against Baylor. I'm actually heading downtown here in a few minutes to go see that game, although obviously we'll be early because that's not till 10 o'clock Eastern.
Jerry Palm, CBS Sports College Basketball Senior Writer. Jerry, with the entire tournament in the Indianapolis area, has that been good for guys like you to be able to go bounce the game from game to game to game and just hop in a car and drive to a different venue?
It's been good for me because I live in Indiana, so I've been able to go to
even
some
better
of the games. Normally I'd get credentialed and I would be able to go, you know, wherever I needed to go. But this year, because of COVID, I wasn't able to get credentialed, so I've had to scrounge tickets up. But I haven't had two games on the same day yet. But if you are fortunate enough to have tickets like that, getting around Indianapolis is very easy. There's two, of course, venues right downtown. With Bankers Life, where the Pacers play, in Lucas Oil Stadium, but then Butler Farmers Coliseum are not far away.
Number one, Michigan, UCLA, number 11 in the Elite Eight tomorrow. Late tip-off there. What do the Bruins have to do to upset Michigan?
Well, keep doing what they've been doing. They've played some really good defense. They've gotten a little bit of help, but their offense has been really productive. Zhu Zhang, of course, is their best player. Although he fouled out, you know, late in the second half against Alabama, they were still able to win in overtime, and they got off to a great start in the overtime. Jacquez has been good, Gray in the middle. So, you know, our offense has been diverse. It hasn't been relying on just one or two guys, and they're going to need that again if they're going to be able to hang with Michigan. They got to find a way to defend Hunter Dickinson, their freshman center, who's been playing at an All-American level this season.
Is USC better than maybe people think or give them credit for?
Well, they've played better in this tournament than they did in the regular season. You know, they're a sixth seed for a reason. You know, they were good in the regular season, but they weren't consistently good. But they have been in this tournament. They've also got a stud center freshman, Evan Mobley, who's probably going to be one of the top few picks in the NBA draft this year. And his twin brother have done the bulk of the work, but they've been getting some really good production from their guards as well. Their defense has been outstanding. And they really made Kansas look silly two games ago and had another outstanding game against Oregon, another Pac-12 team last night. So, yeah, USC, the way they're going – you know, Evan Mobley's the kind of guy that's hard for anybody. They have a chance to give Gonzaga some trouble if they continue to play at the level that they have.
Jerry Palm, CBS Sports College Basketball senior writer here on Sports Talk, breaking down the Elite Eight in the NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament. Oregon State, number 12 seed, taking on Houston, number 2 seed today. Also, number 3, Arkansas versus number 1, Baylor, later today. And then tomorrow, it is 6 seeded USC, number 1 seed Gonzaga, number 11 UCLA, and number 1 Michigan tomorrow. What does USC have to do? What would they have to do to upset Gonzaga? I think that would be a huge upset.
They're going to have to play great defense because Gonzaga is the best offensive team in the country. And they can score with all 5 of their starters. Any one of them could be the guy on any given night. But they don't need one guy to be the guy because all 5 of them are a threat. So it's really going to be a stress on USC's defense, which has been very good in this tournament so far. But if they can slow Gonzaga's offense down, then they have a chance. But Gonzaga has only played one game this year where they won by less than double digits. And that was against West Virginia early on. So it's really been a long time since Gonzaga has been tested. And USC is going to have their hands full.
Who do you got in your Final Four?
Gonzaga, Baylor, Houston, and Michigan of the teams that are left.
How's your bracket looking? Your own personal?
Like a crime scene. I originally had Illinois in the championship game. That didn't last long. I had Alabama in the Final Four. They just went out. My other picks are still around, but it doesn't really matter anymore.
So you still have 3 of the Final Four teams?
Two.
Two.
Yeah.
Okay. Better than most.
Well, this, I don't know that it really is, but it's been a rough tournament for my bracket and for a lot of people's brackets.
Has this one more difficult to kind of, fill out this year because
of
the unknowns?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, it has been difficult for anyone to anticipate legitimately the chaos that we've had in terms of just the sheer number of big upsets going by seed in this tournament. We had a Sweet 16 that had the largest average seed that we've ever had. You had a 15 there for just the second time in Oral Roberts. It would have been difficult for anybody who wasn't just taking a flyer on a lot of this stuff to have come up with a bracket that looked decent after the first 2 rounds.
Jerry Palm, CBS Sports College basketball senior writer. And Jerry, Indiana found their new coach, right? They hired a new basketball
yes.
coach?
Yeah, Mike Woodson, a former player under Bob Knight. He played at IU in the late 70s. So he actually, I think his 4 years were between their second and third national championships under, or first and second national championships under Coach Knight. So he didn't get one of them. He fit in right in between. But it's, I think that was their goal all along, was to find somebody connected to the program. He comes from an NBA background where he's been an assistant and a head coach in the NBA for a long time, and currently an assistant with the Knicks before taking the job at IU yesterday. And, he's got a chance to be successful. The only question for me is, is it a long-term hire because he's 63 years old? So he might get things turned around and then, maybe 5 years later decide he wants to retire. But we do have some coaches in college basketball that are past age 70, prominently Jim Boeheim and Mike Krzyzewski. So I guess we'll have to see. But he's got a chance to be successful. And obviously going to the NBA ranks has worked well for Michigan, which, is probably a big part of why this hire happened.
Jerry, Mark Menard at Master Control, part of our show, he's a huge college basketball and NBA fan. He has a couple for you.
Yeah, Jerry, it seems like we're kind of hurtling towards this Gonzaga and Baylor matchup. And what do you think we'll see in that game if that's what we get?
2 high-quality teams on both ends of the floor. But Baylor, Baylor is a better defensive team than Gonzaga is. And like I said earlier, Gonzaga is the top offensive team in the country and a dominant team in not just offense but scoring margin. Number 1 in both of those categories nationally. So it's going to be a really good game. I think if both teams are well coached, they execute very well offensively. But if you're playing Gonzaga, your defense is really going to be tested. And then Baylor's got a good enough defense, I think, to give them a chance to pass that test.
If you could just kind of project what we, you know, the four games we have set up here to decide the Final Four, I'm not going to ask you who's going to win, but what do you think is going to be the best game? Like, what matchup do you think is going to be the closest, best, wildest game for fans to watch?
It might be Baylor and Arkansas. And I don't think it's a coincidence they're the two closest together in the seed. I'm really curious to see what USC's defense can do with Gonzaga because they played so well in this tournament. But you know, I think Baylor and Arkansas has a chance to be interesting. I think the athleticism of Arkansas could give Baylor some problems tonight.
Jerry Palm, CBS Sports College Basketball Senior Writer. Jerry, always a pleasure, man. Thank you.
All right, thanks.
All right, there he goes, Jerry Palm. We'll step away and come back. This is Sports Talk here on WWL. Still grinding on LSU baseball, their series loss, and having been swept by the Tennessee Volunteers. Welcome back to Sports Talk. LSU now 1-5 in the conference. Not good. Not good at all. Mark Menard at Master Control wants to grill me about LSU baseball. Go right ahead.
I really only have one major question, and that question is, so how they've gotten to this point, how do they turn it around?
Well, they may not, Mark, and they may not this year.
Well, I guess my question is, if you were the coach, what would you do to help them turn it around? Would you have
I can't even begin. Only because, look, Paul Maneri knows what to do. It's not like he needs advice. And the truth of the matter is, they're young. And if they don't make the postseason this year, say they go 14-16 in the SEC or 13-17, or maybe even worse. It could be worse, you know, 12-18. Believe it or not, and LSU fans don't want to hear this, but that'll help them next year and the year after. Like, next year and the year after, this baseball team is going to be really, really good. Keep in mind, you have Dylan Cruz, who should be in an MLB training camp right now. And this is his freshman year. He's a true freshman. He's only going to get better. Next year, it'll be like having a pro baseball player on your team. It already is. He should be playing in the minor leagues this season and maybe even the big leagues at the end of this season or next. So how do you fix it? You got to go through it. You got to have a lean year. It just happens. In particular, because of the amount of seniors and juniors that were drafted for LSU prior to the pandemic, the season prior, that left you with a young team a year ago that got the season canceled on them. So they didn't get the experience that they would have had and been well-seasoned sophomores. They're actually still true freshmen, if you think about it. I'm talking about even a guy Braden Doty, leading the team in home runs with 8, strikes out a lot. He would have had a full year of experience, having already seen SEC-caliber pitching. He didn't get to experience that. Most of this roster has never been to the postseason. A majority of this roster. Devin Fontenot's a holdover from the last time LSU made it to the postseason. Jaden Hill was on the roster. But you're talking about guys like Trey Morgan, big parts of your team. By the way, Trey Morgan had a great weekend individually at the plate. They're super talented. This is the number 3 rated recruiting class in the country. But It takes time. They're going to have to take their lumps. And that'll benefit them for next season. And look, they might turn it around. It's happened before. Paul Maneri's done it before. Got off to a similar start in 2008. Ended up going to the College World Series in Omaha with a young team that started playing really, really well in April. Got hot and won a lot of games. It can still happen. You're 6 games into a 30-game conference schedule.
You're not even a third of the way through the SEC yet. In other words, definitely don't know don't push the panic button. I would invite you, LSU baseball fans, to maybe just know the combination lock on the panic button. Just start to familiarize yourself with it. And when I say that kind of tongue in cheek, because panicking, I don't care if they went 10-20 in the SEC. It wouldn't change my overall opinion about the direction of the program, nor my confidence in Paul Maneri. It just, you know, it just doesn't. Because if you look at the bigger picture, LSU will be a better team next year and the year after if they go through some growing pains this year. They're already going through them. Now, some of the pitching out of the bullpen has been a bit of a disappointment. It's not just the young players. It's the upperclassmen as well. Aaron George has been disappointing. Devin Fontenot blew a save the other day. So, a save opportunity yesterday. So, it's not just the younger players there out of the bullpen that's giving LSU the problems. Offensively, like I mentioned, they lead the country in home runs. They also strike out a lot. Believe it or not, they're I think, three before last in strikeouts in the SEC. Auburn has more than they do. Texas A&M has struck out more than LSU. Auburn's winless in the SEC. Winless. It's a dominant conference. Be patient with LSU. 504-260-1870. Do you think LSU will turn it around? LSU baseball will turn it around? What is your expectations now after a 1-5 start? Is it still hosting a regional? Getting into the NCAA baseball tournament? Whether on the road or hosting, 504-260-1870. I'll get to the text in a few moments. This is Sports Talk here on WWL. All right, back here on Sports Talk. To our phones we go. We find Carl in Marrero. What's going on, Carl? You're on WWL.
Hey, how y'all doing today?
Good, thanks.
I was actually, you know, I watched the games this weekend with LSU's baseball team, and there were a couple of things that just really stood out, and the first thing that stood out to me was center field. I think they're short their center fielder, and that I think that could have cost them a game.
It did.
With the I think he was maybe an infielder playing center field.
No, just a true freshman. Will
okay,
Safford. Yeah, Will
okay.
Safford, who doesn't have a lot of range
right.
defensively.
He's not
and
Gio.
Can
He's
hit a little
Gio.
Bit, but they're missing Giovanni DiGiacomo.
Yeah, Gio could play center field. So that hurts him right there, okay? The other thing I thought kind of stood out to me was there's a few holes in the lineup. You got a few guys that are just not hitting. Now, that may come with time, but we're putting up with some holes in the lineup. And that may have something to do with, you know, I don't know how many guys they stranded, but you had a lot of guys striking out, leaving men in scoring position. So it may be part of the process of a bunch of freshmen. I mean, even the guys that aren't freshmen really are just sophomores. The guys who are juniors, they played a year. They basically didn't play much last year. So you're looking at sophomores and freshmen in my book.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
Other than the three starters, Marceau's played all 3 years, a little bit at least. And then Labus, too. But Hill, you know, really, this is his freshman season as far as I'm concerned. So they didn't pitch that much his first year. Didn't get to pitch much last
year.
So I think this is a maturation process. Yeah, right. So I think it's a maturation process. I know the coach looked depressed. I mean, to watch your head coach put his head down and hold his head, you know he's frustrated. So, and the other thing, too, I was thinking was, you know, when you're having to teach so many new players the nuances of the game and things like that, it's hard when you have a few coaches and you've got all these new players.
Carl, I think you're on the money, man. I think that your assessment's pretty accurate, and it's gonna be a bit of some growing pains. All right, everybody,
Time to play the free cash contest. You're ready to win $1,000? The code word this hour is bike. That's B-I-K-E. And text that word to 72881. That's 72881. Every weekday, every hour between 7 a.m. and 6 p.m., you get a chance to win $1,000 in our Intercom National Cash Contest. Listen for the free cash code word right before the top of the hour news. The next play is coming up tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock. 7 a.m. Good luck from all of us here at WWL. Please do not text and drive. Message and data rates may apply. Sports Talk rolls on here on WWL.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly.